Hello, and welcome back to the Chochmat Nashim podcast. I'm Ann Gordon, here today with...
Shoshana Keats-Jaskol.
Hello, Shoshana. You know, I'm waiting, Shoshana, and frankly, Scott, our producer, until we can actually record again in person.
Amen.
That is what I have to say. In this era of information, we have a great privilege. We get to discover a great deal about anything we want. Information about anything we want. Details upon details upon details. The internet provides all the background on anything you want to look up. What other books did a favorite author write? Why an actor looks familiar, right? What other movies was he or she in? My favorite thing to look up is when I hear somebody who I decided they have maybe the inkling of a Boston accent, and I Google and I discover, frankly, more often than not, that I am right. That is my favorite silly parlor trick. What it means, though, is that we can find out a lot more about all of the people that we learn from. We can find out a lot more about the people we put on a pedestal. And sometimes, really too often, the additional information that we can find knocks those people off their pedestal. We're going to be talking more about this in a moment or two. First, we have some updates for you, and this happened.
So our first update is the last time we spoke, we did talk about all of the social media brouhaha and the amazing awareness that's been happening specifically on Instagram, but also Facebook and Twitter around Agunot, specifically women in the United States of America. And I'm very pleased to be able to say that it's still going on and that at least three of the most high profile and longest waiting women have received their gets. And a number of, some people say five, some people say 10. I'm sure people know more, you know, not everyone wants to go public. Other men have stepped forward to give a get when they didn't want to because they didn't want to be next. And we can talk about shaming and not shaming, but the idea is that the awakening is happening, thank God. Hopefully it will lead to many more changes. And these women will go into this Zman Cheroteinu as free women, which is really, really exciting. Some of these women were waiting 17 years. I mean, just outrageousness. So that's a really happy update for you. And this happened... Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg has a podcast called Behind the Bima. This week, he interviewed Sruli Besser, editor and writer of Mishpacha magazine, who, in talking about their policy to not show women, discussed the fact that they wanted to interview Nikki Haley. And Nikki Haley's team wanted an image of Nikki in the magazine, perhaps the cover, as one does when one profiles a well-known person, politician, celebrity. Okay. But Mishpacha's magazine said no, and that killed the idea of the interview with Nikki Haley. The idea was, once we put Nikki Haley in, then maybe we have to have a advertisement of a woman in a fur coat and see her shoulder, and then 5 years later, we are Vogue, and no one wants to take responsibility for that. And so, Nikki Haley, we are very sorry. We cannot interview you 2021, because in 10 years, we may turn into Vogue, and we can't let that happen.
Clearly, he's speaking tongue-in-cheek. He doesn't think he's really at risk of being Vogue when he doesn't even have pictures of young children, of young girls, I should say.
You and I might say that, but as one person mentioned, well, why do they have men? Are they not afraid of becoming GQ? And so this is honestly, for me, the gift that keeps giving, because we know well that, unfortunately, not having women in images is a terrible precedent, and it doesn't do anything positive for the Jewish community. And I personally thanked Nikki Haley on Twitter for standing up for Jewish women and against misogyny and the erasure of women. And I don't think Mishpacha is very happy about it, but...
Right. We should say this is not about politics. We're not talking about American politics at all here. We're simply talking about the erasure of women. And honestly, we have talked in the past about some of the valuable things that Mishpacha magazine brings to the table. And the problem is, of course, that they undermine some of that good when they perpetuate this idea that women cannot be shown at all.
One of the additional things that Sruli said, which echoed Ellie Pillay, the publisher who was on Behind the Bima a few months ago, basically said, we don't show women, but we talk about mental health. You know, we don't show women, but we, and that's kind of like, to me, it's like saying, well, we don't show Mexicans, but we show black people. It's absolutely ridiculous to show one positive, but at the same time being, you can't be tolerant by being intolerant, right? You can't improve things by making terrible statements and social commentary. So
I don't know if it's stronger or not stronger, but I would say a little differently. I don't think that it undermines the good that the magazine does. whether that's an outlet for discussions about mental health or whatever else that they're talking about that maybe other people are not talking about, I think that's to their credit. And that's fine. The same way that we can say that that is to their credit, one thing does not equate to the other. And that's exactly why you can't say, well, it's good that we do this so we don't have to worry about that other thing. I'm not going to say it's bad that you do that, so I'm not going to give you credit for the good thing you do. Now do both things well.
That was definitely uncomplicated. But it actually feeds into kind of what we're talking about today, which is not humorous, but talks about how there's both good and bad in the same thing. And what do we do about it?
Right. So today we're talking about fallen heroes. I would say that we're looking to move beyond the issues that always plague people who are different in their personal lives as compared to what they give to the world. Not that long ago, the whole Me Too movement brought out a lot of bad stuff about a lot of people who, in particular, but not only, have entertained all of us for a very long time. It wasn't only or particularly a Hollywood phenomenon, but I think that those are the names that we knew the most when they come to the fore. They're more in the public eye. The question of separating the artists from their work is not new. So in this case, in the Me Too case, can we enjoy the Miramax movies and still decry Harvey Weinstein and his conduct? To shift into a different sphere, can we think that JFK or Bill Clinton or any other public official can be good at his job? Or her job, I know, but for the most part, the odds here are that we're talking about the men. You know, if after somebody's revealed to be a womanizer or a philanderer or just generally unsavory in his or her personal life, I say, Shoshana, with some hesitation, I say yes, that we can separate the artist from the art, the politician from his personal life. I might want to remove from a position of power. I want to make sure that he can't hurt anybody, but the question of whether there's other good that this person has done, I don't think that the bad behavior necessarily undermines the good that is done in these specific examples that I mentioned. Shoshana, you may disagree with me, and I'll give you a chance to do that in one moment. I just want to draw a distinction between this kind of case and another case which I have a much harder time doing this separation. I'll give the example, the most public example I think that I know of, which is Bill Cosby, who set himself up as, you know, the purveyor of the Cosby kids. And he's got a book called Parenthood, I think. He had the Cosby Show, which was like nice, warm family values. And then it's revealed to be that he had really a vile personal life in a way that was terribly harmful to people. I feel like I don't even want to get into what we heard about, what he was tried for. But the problem I have and why I don't put in the same thing as separating the arts from the art is that if you set yourself up to be a role model and your personal behavior is literally a contradiction in terms to the role model that you set yourself up to be, then I have a much harder time continuing to appreciate the role model behavior that you, like, it was like just a mask, just a costume that had nothing to do with underneath it all who you really were. Part of that's the hypocrisy, and part of that is literally puncturing whatever good I thought you might have been bringing to the world. There are other people that we know have done this as well. You know, anytime we hear about, and certainly it happened in the Christian church, the fact that there are people held up by their society and holding themselves up to be paragons of virtue who then were not. And we have seen this in our own world as well. I'm going to get to the point or a more refined point here. And then, Shoshana, I'm going to turn it back to you. Most recently, the news broke that Yehuda Meshi Zahav, who we on this podcast spoke about, we quoted him several episodes ago, because Nebuch, this poor man, he lost both his father and his mother to COVID in quick succession. He was one of the co-founders of the Zaka organization, so he has a medical background to some degree anyway, and he was able to tell his family members, do not go to that party, that Hanukkah party, because it is going to be too crowded and there's too great of a risk of COVID, and they went anyway, and they got sick, and they died. And so we brought him, we quoted him as a representative of exactly a voice within the Haredi world, the ultra-Orthodox world, who was taking the stand that we thought everybody should be taking, and he was being a model citizen. And the problem is that the news that broke more recently, and it truly made me sick to my stomach when I first heard, is that he's not a model citizen in other areas of his life, in his personal life. He was revealed to, or at least there's allegations. We don't know anything legal at this point, but in terms of allegations of sexual abuse of people who are minors at the time, the claim that he abused his position of power from his organization. Somebody said it well, I thought. The one story was like, knocking him down from his pedestal, and you don't even believe it. Nobody was willing to believe it. By the time there's a preponderance of stories coming forward over many, many, many years, and the claim that there's a cover-up, and the people in his organization, and people in the Haredi world, and people on the Tznius patrols within the Haredi world kind of all kept their mouths shut about this, it's much harder to think that there was ever a pedestal to begin with. And I think that sometimes this is, you know, truly devastating. I want to say that my own distinction here between, you know, art and artist, and when does somebody undermine who they are? I think that if you're a member of the Haredi world, your whole life is supposed to be about making yourself a paragon of virtue. And he has undermined that for sure. On the other hand, I don't think that that undermines the work of Zaka, the organization itself, which stands independent of him, you know, and he has resigned and all, but it's just so disheartening, so disappointing. And at some level, I would even say, I don't know. I don't want to say harsher than, I'll stop there. Shoshana, your turn.
I don't think there's anyone who didn't already know, like you said, this apparently this was some sort of open secret amongst certain members of the Haredi society. But I don't think there's any one of us outside of those people that weren't just like, what? Like, you know, we're kind of getting used to these exposés where, you know, heads of this or people here are, you know, caught with their, I don't want to say pants down, but caught, you know, having done horrible things. But Yehuda Meshi Zahav, like, I actually, when someone sent it to me and said, this is horrible, and I get this, you know, this is horrible text all the time, but I was like, no, like, it really, Harvey Weinstein, I didn't react that way. I can't even, maybe Bill Cosby, because I grew up on the Cosby Show. I mean, like you were saying, but like, this was so, no. And the more I read, and Haaretz did a massive job. I mean, I, like Haaretz or not, they were not printing anything without a lot of corroboration. They did a tremendous investigative piece. And you can't really stand here and say it's not true. Okay?
Especially because of all the details that came out after the Haaretz piece.
Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, it opened the floodgates. There's no question. And so, you know, someone that I looked up to, someone that I held up, like, you know, when we spoke about him as someone who really broke down barriers in the Haredi community and made a tremendous change from his childhood to now serving the community and not being, I think his son was in the army, whereas he grew up, you know, very virulently anti-Zionist. He was going to get the Israel Prize. And it was just a big blow in general. And it really just reiterates that, like, you never know. You never, ever know. So as a parent, I'm thinking things. As a Jew, as an Israeli, as someone who appreciates his work in Zaka, it's so hard to swallow these things and to know what to do with it. And that's kind of why we got onto this topic, because it was just like, you know, I don't know what to do. What's my role here? You know, am I supposed to be more suspect? Am I supposed to be understanding? Am I supposed to be, I don't know. I don't know what to do. And it's kind of like, does it show that humans are complicated? You said a very good point, and you said there's a difference between, you know, abusing your power and being a paragon of something like Cosby and then, you know, being the exact opposite. I don't know. I'm at a loss, and there's a lot here, and I just want to protect myself, my kids, and learn from it. I just want to learn from it. And
well, so I think maybe this is what we learn from it. A, yeah, you have to be suspect of everybody. Even as you can appreciate everybody, welcome everybody with open arms until you know otherwise, but without presuming that anybody is above reproach. I think we say we protect ourselves, we protect our families, we regard everybody as, I don't think you can say everybody is guilty until proven innocent, but the bar for when you're looking at making sure that you're protecting children has to be a lot, much, much lower than saying, you know, innocent until proven guilty. So that there is always this measure of take care, take great care, make sure that you protect yourselves and your children. You talk to your children, you know, I don't need to tell you, you have many more children than I do.
But we many. Make
sure, five times as many. So you make sure that you have, you know, open channels of communication. You make sure that all these general advice, listen, it's not insane. Halacha in this case is not insane. We have rules about yichud. We have rules about negiya. And I
understand. But you know what? Yichud, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it's important to what you're saying. The rules are important. And someone, I don't remember who I was talking to about this specific thing. There's no yichud. If Meshi Zahav wanted to take my 5 to 8-year-old, whatever, and do something. First of all, I don't let my kids go with anyone by themselves. Stam. Okay? I don't. It doesn't matter. But I don't know that anyone would have been suspect or would have been comfortable saying no in another circumstance. But like,
and so we learn.
But there's no, I'm saying there's no yichud in this. So like, exactly what you're saying. Like, we have to be like, you know what? There's no reason ever for year 5, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, whatever you're old, to go alone with someone to do something. There's no reason. There's never a reason for it. And avoid it, no matter what, and make it a policy. I actually, it reminds me of something. I just remembered this. I had a good friend a while back. She would never let her daughters sleep over my daughter's house. Why? Because my daughter has an older brother. Okay? So she said, I love your son. He's amazing. But my shita is, if there is an older brother in the house, my daughter can't sleep there. I didn't argue with her. That's her shita. Okay, fine. That was her policy in order to avoid these kinds of things. Chad v'chalak. And this way she didn't have to say one person was suspect over another person. She said, this is my shita and you can come and sleep here.
I think there is some measure of trust. We need to train our children and we need to train ourselves to feel that we have the voice to be able to say no. There's a reason that people say, just say no, right? It's something you have to learn. It's not a given, especially if you're dealing with somebody who you think you like, who is your friend or your friend's brother, or whatever, that kind of thing. But the story with Meshi Zahav and some of these other stories as well, where they are in a position of power over the person, you know, over whoever they're going to then abuse, whatever, the idea that we need to be even firmer with our training, again, of ourselves, of our peers, of our children, to say, you can always say no. There's this great line, you know, when you teach kids, if there's a stranger who feels funny, but it's not the word funny, whatever the word is that I'm blanking on, and I'm sure one of our listeners has it at their fingertips and can tell us, but the idea is that anybody who feels a little bit, even just a smidge of discomfort with how something is proceeding in an interpersonal relationship, in an interpersonal dynamic, can say, this is not okay. And the point about stranger danger, or the fact that it was brought to my attention, this phrasing that I can't remember, was in the context of somebody who you don't know. If like a stranger offers a kid candy and they want candy, but there's something made them feel iffy or funny or whatever this word is that I still am not remembering. The bottom line is, we know statistically the greatest risk to people is not from a stranger. And that's, it's not just about kids, right? It's also about adults. It's about presuming that somebody in a position that is officially a paragon of virtue, officially up on that pedestal, they're not supposed to be taking themselves off the pedestal. So you don't think that there's anything going to happen that's wrong. So you should try and say, you don't know what to do. You don't know where to go. I think the bottom line is, this is one of those issues where a hierarchy of authority, which we value in Judaism, which is so important, can become tricky. Maybe tricky is the word. Maybe tricky is the word that you're not supposed to have from strangers that you don't know who they are. They feel tricky. That's what it is. You're not supposed to, you're supposed to step aside. The kid is supposed to say no and run if they have to, right? But what do you do when the person who's behaving in a tricky way is somebody that you have been taught to respect? I don't want to make this about this particular offender, because the issue is across the board, where I feel like we're not going to be able to do this topic justice today. We're talking about it today because it's raw, and I hope it will always be raw, that we shouldn't become, you know, tolerant of the terrible behavior that knocks somebody off a pedestal. Unfortunately, I fear that it means that we are at risk of not putting people on pedestals to begin with.
No, that's a good point.
I have a friend who said, the more he learns about his role models, his prior role models, the less they become role models, right? That's why I started by talking about the information age, because we have so much information. Everybody is human and everybody's got their foibles. And that doesn't mean this. The distinction between how do we make sure that we can treat people with respect and also not lose respect and also keep away from abusive situations, people using their power to mess other people up. I'm with you a little bit in feeling stymied here.
Yeah. I think there's a lot that we can take from this, and we'll probably be digesting this for a while. And, you know, if you guys out there have any ideas or suggestions, please, you know, send them in. We'll be happy to revisit this later on for an update or something. And as a matter of fact, if anyone would like to know how to talk to their children about this, The Orthodox Conundrum, our producer Scott Kahn interviewed Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz about this recently. You can find that on jewishcoffeehouse.com.
We've quoted him in the past as well. He's really the authority, I think, on the good side of this. One of the reasons that we're talking about it, and I think it goes without saying, as our mantra goes, is that the more this gets talked about, the less there's a risk of people being smothered by the secrecy, by a culture of silence about things that need to be brought to the open. So I think it is horrific that Meshi Zahav did these things. I don't think it's horrific that once he did them, that we are talking about it. We need to talk about it so that other people don't get hurt by other people.
Agree, 100%. And now for something positive, I'm going to dish. This past week, it was my birthday, my English
Happy
and my
birthday.
Hebrew. Thank you. English and Hebrew were like back to back, so it was like a 48-hour party. And my wonderful husband took me up to the Golan, where it is so green and so gorgeous and so full of flowers. I think I have 400 pictures on my phone. Just plugging the Golan, plugging Eretz Yisrael, plugging getting out. Go out. Go out in the sunshine and enjoy yourself. Put your phone down. That's my dish.
Here's mine. We're about to enter Pesach. So last year at this time, we in the world were in a very different state than we in the world are right now. And I wish I could say, and a year ago, I would have wished I could say by now, the pandemic is a thing of the past and everything has returned to normal. And of course, that is not the case. As we've discussed ad nauseum, right? The benefits of vaccination, and please God, we should, you know, rid our world of the coronavirus. That's not what I want to dish about. What I want to dish about is the fact that we are in a different state now as we approach Pesach. Last year approaching Pesach, the discussion was, what do you do if you're on your own? How many people spent Pesach alone last year? Literally alone, sometimes with Zoom, if they were willing to do that, you know, in terms of using electricity or leaving something on over Yontif. And this year it's even, you know, it's complicated. It's Saturday night, Shabbos leads into Yontif. But A, people who are alone have learned that they can handle it. I wasn't alone. It was me and my son. But that's a very tiny little Seder as compared to anything I've ever experienced in my whole life. And I don't know if I will ever do it again that way. I don't know that I would opt to do it again that way. But you know what? I did it. And now I can do anything, right? Like, not anything. I don't mean it in a cocky way. I mean it in an empowering way. I think that a lot of people who were scared of making Pesach last year, this year can approach it and saying, oh, I can do that. I would rather be with family. I would rather be with friends. I would rather have, even if it's still a very small Seder. I think the people I know who are getting together with other people for Pesach this year are doing it on a very small scale. People are nervous, and rightly so, about the spread of the coronavirus, but not like last year, not in that way. We are in a very different stage of the pandemic. We are a very different stage in our experience and our keeping of Pesach. So I'm dishing because I'm grateful.
And we wish you all a chag sameach. You should just be happy and healthy. This should be the last chag, God willing, that we have to spend worried about these things. You should all get the vaccine. Well, you know how we feel about the vaccine already. That's not a secret. And we hope you have a wonderful, wonderful chag.
Come talk to us on our Facebook page. Come talk to us on Instagram. Come talk to us on Twitter. You can reach us in many different ways. Chochmat Nashim, Chochmatnashim.
Can you hear us now?